Rolling.
This is the FedSoc Films Podcast,
where we continue the conversation sparked on film.
You want to know what freedom tastes like? It tastes like this beer.
Take one.
This is, in fact, the classic solution in search of a problem.
Action. That cannot help but be controversial.
Cut.
With expert discussion and analysis.
With the greatest legal minds on the topic today. The FedSoc Films Podcast.
It's a wrap.
Welcome to the FedSoc Films Podcast. I'm Samantha Schroeder, Deputy Director of FedSoc Films. In 1933, the 21st Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified. It repealed the 18th Amendment, the amendment that mandated a nationwide prohibition on alcohol. In this Cutting Room Floor episode, author and historian Garrett Peck tells the story of the 21st Amendment. Garrett Peck was featured in our film, American Craft, What Beer Can Teach Us About Well-Crafted Laws. We've saved this history of the 21st Amendment from the cutting room floor for the second episode of the Cutting Room Floor edition of the FedSoc Films Podcast. Take a listen.
The 21st Amendment was ratified on December 5th, 1933, which has become to be known as Repeal Day, or also as Cinco de Drinco. With the 21st Amendment, which repealed prohibition, that gave the states the power to regulate alcohol within their borders, unless you see actually a whole bunch of different regulatory authorities that manage regulations. First off, of course, the federal government does in fact regulate alcohol. You've got the Food and Drug Administration, and also very importantly, within the Treasury Department, there is the Alcohol, Tobacco Tax, and Trade Bureau, which basically levies all the excise taxes and collects those for the federal government. At the state level, each state had to set up its own form of alcoholic beverage control, or known as ABC. And so all 50 states eventually had to set those up. You can also have local regulatory measures in place. For example, something as simple as zoning. Where do you put a brew pub, or where do you put a brewery, or a winery for that matter? So there's a whole bunch of different regulations. If you're going to open up a brew pub, there's a whole bunch of different regulatory authorities that you have to satisfy before you can actually open up shop and start selling beer. But with the 21st Amendment, that gave the states the power to regulate alcohol within their borders. And thus, all the states had to set up different alcohol regulatory regimes to control alcohol. In addition, one of the things that that was part of the new regulations, federal regulations around alcohol, was to legalize not homebrew, but rather home winemaking. Brewing had not been done in the house at all since probably the 18th century, so no one really thought about this at the time that, gee, people want to brew beer at the house. But they were, however, brewing wine and fruit juices like cider and that kind of stuff. And thus they legalized producing wine and juices, alcoholic-based juices, in the home, but they forgot about beer. And thus you had a several decades-long gap before home brewing became legal again. Even the states could still forbid winemaking, right? Because some states were bone dry. For example, you had Mississippi was the very last state to go wet. That was 1966, 2 years before I was born, which is incredible. It's that recent. So again, the 21st Amendment allowed the states to decide their own alcohol regulations. So if a state was bone dry, they stayed bone dry, right? So Oklahoma, for example, stayed dry all the way till 1959. They had enshrined dry law in its constitution, and they had to change the constitution to allow alcohol. So fairly late in its history. Again, the 21st Amendment was about state power, and it gave those states the right to decide for themselves how they want to regulate alcohol within their borders. After Prohibition ended, there were only a couple dozen breweries left in the country. Prohibition was really hard on the brewers because they had these huge facilities, and they had to pay taxes on them and so on. And so most of them shut down during Prohibition. A number of them did manage to reopen. However, it was really hard, especially for local breweries or regional breweries, to compete. There were already three big national brands that emerged during the 1930s, and those were Anheuser-Busch, in other words, Budweiser. Then you had Pabst and Schlitz. Those were the big three. And very quickly, they seized national market share. This is the era of the radio. So you have national advertising, and the small local and regional brewers just could not compete against this. They didn't have the marketing resources. So by the 1950s, you've got this rapid consolidation in the brewing industry that leads to just a couple dozen breweries even left in the country by the 1970s. It's just remarkable. And so beer itself becomes, by the 1970s, it's a commodity. All three of the big national brewers are largely producing the same product. There's not a whole lot of differentiation, and they are now competing on price. And this is what happens when you have a commodity product. Miller came up with a way to kind of beat Budweiser through this trade war, which everyone else copied as well, and that was the brand known as Miller Lite. because, again, the brewers were all kind of spiraling down together, so they had to come up with ways to differentiate themselves. So in this case, they went low. They went for the low-carb and low-calorie beverage that was popular. In fact, still is pretty popular even through today. However, beer effectively was still a commodity, and beer, for those brewers, for those home brewers who were looking for something better, they were kind of waiting in the wings for their opportunity to bring something better to the marketplace to replace this kind of swill that Americans were left with by the 1970s. The first states to legalize brew pubs were all on the West Coast. So it started off with Washington State in 1982, shortly followed thereafter by Oregon and California. So again, you see the West Coast really drives this behavior because there's so much experimentation that's going on in the West Coast. They've also got the wine industry, I might add, as well. And within the next decade or so, you see this big tidal wave of states that add on to this as well. So Washington, D.C., where we are right now, legalized brew pubs in 1992, so exactly 10 years later. And you fast forward that all the way over to 2013, where the last two states, Alabama and Mississippi, finally legalized brew pubs. But most of them legalized them back in the 1980s. People saw very quickly, here's a great opportunity. Our local brewers want to start brewing and opening up new brew pubs. A brew pub basically is a restaurant that produces its own beer. That idea caught on very quickly, and the states as well quickly enabled the regulations to allow those to open up. And it's been a big source of tax revenue and jobs as well. And it's been good for tourism too.
Thanks again for listening to the FedSoc Films podcast. Be sure to rate and review us in your favorite podcast platform. Watch the full film, American Craft, What Beer Can Teach Us About Well-Crafted Laws, on YouTube, Facebook, and at fedsoc.org. That's FEDSOC.org. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. That's a wrap.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.